A big hello and a warm welcome to everyone. My name is Simon Pittman, and I will be your host for this InCosmetics Connect podcast panel discussion, brought to you by CLR Berlin. And today we will be focusing on the potential threat of natural ingredients to sustainability, while discussing possible solutions to the problem. This is part of a series of podcasts that will look at the most pressing issues facing the beauty and personal care industry during what has proved to be unprecedented times for the industry worldwide. Today, we have assembled some of the leading industry experts to share their views on the natural ingredients and sustainability question. So next, I'd like to introduce you to our panelists who represent different areas of the industry. First of all, we have Harold van der Hoven, who is the Director of Technical Marketing at Active Cosmetic Ingredients Company, CLR Berlin. Harold, if you can just say hi to our listeners and tell us a little bit more about your industry experience.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Harold. I've been working at CLR since 2006, started as R&D manager, and then in 2013 went into technical marketing. Before that, I was in the Netherlands and worked for a company which produced cosmetic products for third parties. That's in short who I am.
Wonderful. Thank you, Harold. We also are privileged to have with us Dr. Barbara Olioso, who is an expert and consultant in the development of green, clean and sustainable beauty and personal care brands. A big hello to Barbara, and if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself as well, Barbara.
Hi, everybody. I have over 20 years experience in natural organic formulations, which I love very much. And I also help and support startups and as well as bigger companies when it comes to the Sustainable Beauty Manifesto, which is very trendy at the moment. And I moderate the Sustainability Corner at InCosmetics Global.
Wonderful. Thank you, Barbara. We are also very honored to have Catherine Sheridan, who's the founder and CEO of Sustainability Consult, a leading bioeconomy communications and PR agency. A warm welcome to you, Catherine, and if you could say hi and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Hi, Simon. Thank you. And hi, everyone. I've been working around sustainability and environmental issues for nearly 20 years as a journalist and then in communications and PR. So I guess I approach this much more from the consumer communications point of view and from sustainability more broadly.
Thanks, Catherine, and a warm welcome to you again. Okay, so we will proceed by asking a series of questions and get the perspective of the panelists. I might add that you're all welcome to chip in with your thoughts in response to any of the questions. So the first question is, what do you see as being the biggest threats to sustainability sourcing natural ingredients right now? Who would like to answer that question?
Oh, all right. So I can take that. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara.
So given what's happening to me at the moment, I think the biggest threat actually is the communication and claims around sustainability and environmental claims. Because if we apply the same criteria used like for products benefits to environmental claims, it leads to a certain type of complexity, testing, which are still, in the process of being validated and developed. And there is also a cost attached to it. So, it's very difficult to, not nearly impossible, to claim eco-friendly products because of all the red tape attached to the claims substantiation in Europe. So in my opinion, it's very difficult, especially for finished products, not raw materials, to communicate simply to the consumers the environmental benefits a product has without ending up blinding them with all sorts of complexity related to biodegradability, microplastic, bioaccumulation, and so on and so on. I'm sorry to say, I don't think it's the actual source of ingredients at the moment, because a lot of nice things are happening, and I can see that at the sustainability corner a lot, for me, it's more about how we communicate these efforts we make about the products.
That's very interesting, Barbara. Thank you. What about the other panelists? Would you like to share your thoughts quickly on that?
Yes, I can. I think that's a very valid approach. Not making it too complicated. On the other hand, we really need to watch out, and that's what we've seen with natural cosmetics and greenwashing as well in the last 10, 20 years, that we do not start greenwashing when it comes to the topic of sustainability. So we need to, as an industry, be reliable and thorough, accepting that we need to get into compromises here and there, but be very clear and honest in our communication in the end to the consumer. I think that's a very important point. So there's really a need for finding good, sensible, valid compromises, in my view.
Right.
It's a relief to me that the other panelists are talking about greenwashing, because normally I have to do that. So that's great. And I totally support what both of you are saying. For me, there's an additional threat, which is maybe just worth mentioning when we're talking about ingredients right now. And I mean, the pandemic has really shed light on the vulnerabilities in global supply chains and the weaknesses. And I see more and more people moving to at least to talking about a more local, more ethical sourcing, a more distributed manufacturing model as potentially a way to reduce, you know, those vulnerabilities of very often relying on just one source. So I would just add that.
Thanks. That's a very good point. Thank you for that, Catherine and Harold. So let's move on to the next question. Do you believe that given the sustainability question, natural beauty and personal care products are increasingly becoming a privilege rather than a must have?
I actually think that sustainability and, you know, natural products have always been a privilege. You know, they've never been truly accessible to every consumer. And that is the problem for me with corporate sustainability as it is today. It is very elitist. And when we look at sustainability, we look at climate change, climate breakdown, and ecological disaster, the people who suffer the most are the least privileged. You know, they're the ones that are least able to afford premium green products. So we need to make it so that it's no longer an elitist situation where, you know, the companies take responsibility for their products and ensure that, you know, instead of it being a premium product, all personal care products are made as sustainable as possible. I mean, treating sustainability as sort of a nice to have is not going to work anymore. You know, we are basically, you know, in trouble if we don't keep making change, and we're not doing enough. We're not doing as much as we can be doing. And at the end of the day, if we can't turn things around, you know, we are going to fry on the planet. So it's quite a challenging moment that we find ourselves in.
Very insightful response. Thank you so much, Katja. What about the other panelists?
Yeah, I think there's a double thing to it. When you look at just the products, if you look at natural cosmetics, yes, they've been more expensive than conventional products on average. On the other hand, the consumer is also often not willing to pay that extra euro or dollar for a more natural or more sustainable product, and sustainability, of course, being much more important than naturalness as far as I'm concerned. So that's a two-way street. The consumer also needs to start realizing that it's better, more sustainable to buy a cream for €4 as opposed to a product which is not sustainable for €3, and that's another thing I'd like to add from that point of view.
That feels like a commentary on the economy as a whole. I think there is enough money to go around. It's just the way that things are structured right now. I mean, indeed, as Harold says, you know, people are not always able or willing to pay extra. We talk a lot about spreading the burden and there is no green premium anymore. But at the end of the day, you know, that when I look at the amount of funding that goes to, you know, cleaning up after oil spills and this kind of thing, to take it very simplistically, you know, the way that the economy is structured right now is not in favor of green products of any kind. It's not in favor of, you know, sustainability or reducing inequalities so that everyone can live a decent life and buy decent products.
Yeah, I think at the moment the problem is that we only count the immediate cost. We don't think of long-term cost, like you mentioned, the pollution cost, the cost of the permanent environmental damage or cleaning up the sea. We had this problem, I think it was in Mauritius recently, which is terrible. And what is the cost of that? We need to think also long-term, not just short-term. And I think we need to promote a culture of less is best. We buy less, better quality, more environmentally aware or friendly, and we just buy less and we promote this type of culture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for those very insightful comments to all three panelists on that question. Let's move on to the third question, which is, I'd also like to get your opinion on the use of biotechnology to produce natural ingredients in labs using fermentation processes. Do you think that this could help in the sustainability of natural ingredients? So how?
Let me begin with saying that essentially, if it's done right, then yes. But if it's not done right, it can still be as harmful as let's say good old fashioned chemistry, as far as that is concerned. Biotechnology helps us in making products more sustainably, produce them more sustainably, but only when done right. We still need to put lots of energy in these processes if we don't watch out. So it is not as straightforward as people might think. GMO is another topic which might come in when we talk about the use of enzymes in extraction processes, which do help in making extraction processes more efficient, and therefore an active ingredient in the end better and possibly also safer. There's a lots of buttons to turn and push when it comes to this technology. But we at CLR, we focus a lot on this technology, and basically part of our development processes is how easy and how well can we produce it, how much energy goes in, how much waste comes out. It is not as straightforward as we think.
That's very interesting, Harry. I don't want to go open a can of worms on this issue, but how would a brand contemplating embracing biotechnology ingredients, how would they determine whether or not the processes behind the ingredients they want to combine into their formulations are actually sustainably produced?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's say the larger companies, we see that they are very much focused on what's your process, what do you use during fermentation, these kinds of things, whereas smaller companies do not have and cannot, probably because they don't have the resources, focus on that. It is up to us to be reliable in that sense. So it's up to us to make sure that the product is produced sustainably. And biotech helps us with that, absolutely.
Comment about the Sustainable Development Goals by the United Nations. So they give some key performance indicators, and some companies have started sort of working with that, but it's unlikely they share the data with the clients. They might have data in relation to the social aspect, to the water consumption, maybe the CO2 impact, but... Yes, there isn't still, because it's still early days, I think the companies are a little bit hesitant to share these data. And maybe this is an opportunity to create a space for manufacturers to share these data just behind closed doors in order to improve on how to communicate and how to improve generally on the key performance indicators set by the United Nations.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I've worked in biotech for a long time in the chemicals and plastics space. And so obviously some of that comes into cosmetics and personal care. And with my sustainability background, I would say the only way to really reliably measure impact is through life cycle assessment. The only way you can compare and say this ingredient from biotech is better than this synthetic petrochemical or naturally sourced material is a life cycle assessment. And I'd like to add that nothing is truly sustainable. That doesn't exist. It's not possible. You know, so it always has to be better than something. And Barbara started off talking about the challenges around, you know, greenwashing and environmental claims. And I think that that feeds into this as well. You know, it can only be have a better performance compared to another ingredient. There's nothing that's really truly sustainable. And I wanted to say as well, in terms of biotechnology and natural, I do a lot in biotechnology, but I struggle a bit calling a product from biotechnology a natural product. My understanding of the process is through fermentation or other biotechnology processes, catalysis, whatever, you can recreate natural products. So you're basically fermenting different types of sugars with a yeast or with a microbe. So essentially you're fermenting sugars with a bug to make the end product that you want. So it's coming out of a fermentation plant, like a small scale biorefinery. It will be born in the lab, but it will be made in a biorefinery. To me, that takes the pressure off sourcing specialty ingredients, which you know, sometimes are very difficult to get a hold of, very expensive. And with biotech, you can really make those ingredients reliably at whatever scale you need. But I would hesitate to call a biotechnology product a natural product as such. I don't think there's a definition. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a definition that would fit that.
Actually, there is the ISO 16128. They define what is natural and natural derivative, and so biotechnology would fit with natural derivatives.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really a matter of definitions in the end. Cosmos has a similar approach in that sense as the ISO norm, but it's really just definition. It's really just interpretation of what is natural and what is not. And so yeah.
Yeah, but it helps because you know consumers like numbers. They're so easy to understand, and there are a lot of claims on the market. You know, claiming, I don't know, 90% natural derived. And so on. Even though I don't completely agree with the definition of the ISO 16128, there are some positive aspects to it.
Very interesting. Thank you to the panel for enlightening us on all things biotech and very useful information for our audience there. So the last question I'd like to pose to all of you equally as panelists, what do you see as the best approach to getting the sustainability question right for natural beauty and personal care products?
I think we need to start to distinguish naturalness from sustainable. All depending on definitions, obviously. I think sustainability is the way forward, and sustainability includes safety. And of course, eco-tox and these kinds of things, it includes everything the consumer wants, and we as a human race and the nature around us need. I think that's a very important first step to make. And then it gets really complicated, obviously. And what is the best approach? I think you first need to have a bird's eye view on things. What's really important and what's not, or at least prioritize first the things which you, for your company, are important and for your customers are important. And that's something we at our companies are working on and sometimes struggling with, to be honest, because there's so many things to look at and so many things to prioritize in the end. So it is a difficult process, I think, for many, many companies.
Thanks for that, Harold. So what about Barbara and Catherine?
I think the definition is a very good suggestion, and I agree totally with that. And that's why I love to be part of the Sustainability Corner, because all these players, big and small, take part, and we start these discussions, we share our views. And that is a good beginning to create a definition. But at the same time, because of the complexity, you know, there isn't one way to define it. It's like, you know, one path going from, I don't know, Rome to Paris. There are many routes you could take. And it's more about the ethos and the spirit behind it, your intentions. And for me, the key thing behind even before the definition is the culture. It's about balancing the financial aspect with the ethic aspects, the environmental aspects, the social aspects, because otherwise it's always going to be, you know, a difficult battle, if you like. Whereas if we balance all these aspects, and sustainability is about people, people, planet, and profit. If we manage to reach this sweet spot, I think we don't even need a definition. But that is more sort of in the long term future. But to start with, we could think of the a definition, and maybe the sustainability corner can be the place to start defining.
Thank you, Barbara. What about Catherine? What are your thoughts?
I feel like informed consumers will always want to buy natural personal care products at the end of the day. So we just need to keep innovating to reduce the impact of products and packaging as much as possible. But when we talk about sustainability, it's important also to zoom out. And just to sum this up, I would say to get sustainability right for natural beauty and personal care, and indeed for all products, it takes leadership. I think if leaders in personal care and chemical companies would really take a step back and look honestly at their business and their own values, then, you know, they might find that they're not really leading from a place of integrity. You know, we're in a system of runaway consumerism. So I feel like we need to also zoom out and ask the tough questions and be ready to act on them. And in terms of biotech, just to sum up, I mean, if the overall life cycle impact is lower, and it usually is, then I do think that biotech is a good part of the solution. It's not an either or, it's just about making better products.
Great, thank you so much. That brings us to the end of our podcast. I'd like to thank our panelists, Harold, Barbara, and Catherine, for their expert insights. And to you, our listeners, for tuning in to this In Cosmetics Connect podcast, hosted by myself, Simon Pittman, and brought to you by CLR Berlin. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Simon.